organized and neatly arranged. But I have, I guess I could give a general introduction and a view of what I think of when I think of family life and home. And because to me, home and family life is almost, it's kind of the same thing in my mind. And it can, obviously there's a huge variation of what your home and what your family is. So to me, I think it's very important to deliberately think like what is going to be, what kind of a home and what kind of a family do I want, and where do I want this to, where do I want this to go and to end up, and to like what's the vision of the family and of the home. And then I think that needs to be realistic. And that's also going to mean that it's different for everyone, because a home is like, whether you have three mansions with 24 servants or you have a townhome or a covered wagon on the prairie, like those are all homes, and those are all places where people do things together. And I think those, they all have a vision and a purpose, otherwise it's a bit aimless. And I guess I'll speak somewhat, it might make it more clear if I use ours as an example. Not that I have it all figured out, it's kind of just, to some degree, it's kind of just been flopped in our laps, and now that's how it is. But what I mean by limiting it or focusing it based on what a realistic expectation is. So we wanted ours to be a place of hospitality, and we both wanted children. We have children, and there are easy things and hard things about that, but I don't think it's something that we didn't want. I don't know if we would have done it quite like this if we would have been asked how, but it doesn't matter. So then there are things that, there's this line that I think of, there's a book that I haven't read, I don't know exactly what it's about, but the title I really liked, it's called Love Your Life, Not Somebody Else's. And that's, I think that's very difficult for us, because we see, like I see people that have older kids or fewer kids or more kids or more money or more property or larger business or something like that, and it's easy to want, and there's a healthy type of kind of using them as an example, but you can't do everything. So we for example, we think it's good and it's beneficial for the girls or the kids to have animals and horses, but then you can't have a really nice lawn. That's just how it works. So things like that, to choose things that are not mutually exclusive, and to be, we'll talk about marriage eventually, and it's very important to be united in those. Otherwise, it'll be almost impossible. You can certainly raise a family in a town or something, but we have the opportunity, we have a little bit of property, and that's something that we choose to spend money on improving it, and we spent a little money to buy it, and that's money that is then not spent on vacations or education or something like that, missions trip. So all that to say that there are something has to be more than just a good thing to choose to do it as a family and as a home. It has to be better than all the other things which compete for the same resources and the same time. Because there are too many mutually incompatible things to choose from. So that's what I mean by kind of catering a vision towards what you have in life, and not, but by all means don't have a vision because you don't have, I wasn't given 5 talents, so therefore I can't invest in this 5-talent activity, so I can't do anything. Like that I think is, that's the danger to that. Yeah, and I guess you can give more examples. Like I do think there's certainly a ministry you can have without kids. I did missions trips when I was alone, and those are very good things. And you can have a very, very nice and a peaceful home, and I really think those can be very good things. But they're just not, we don't have any tall wine glasses because they break, and we don't want that. You can certainly have a ministry around tall wine glasses at the table. It's just not our ministry. I think I'll let you talk now.
When I kind of just brainstormed about this, I think obviously family life is a pretty broad topic, but 4 components that came to mind for me were marriage, the home, which Bill touched on a bit, and then for the children part of it, parental behavior and childbearing. So on marriage, and Phil said this too, so it should be a place of peace and mutual encouragement. I think those are 2 really important parts of marriage. Could something with the Bible read Ecclesiastes 4:9-12?
I have it. Sure, better than one, because they have a good reward for their toil. For if they fall, one will lift up his fellow, but woe to him who is alone when he falls and has not another to lift him up. And again, if 2 lie together, they keep warm, but how can one keep warm alone? And although a man might prevail against one who is alone, 2 will withstand him. A 3-fold cord is not quickly broken.
So I think if we already are married, then just striving towards peace and mutual encouragement is important. And if you feel like that's there, then that's great. I think continuing to look towards marriage enrichment for your entire life is a good thing. And for those of us who are not yet married, I think looking for somebody that you feel like there's peace and mutual encouragement is good. Like if there's a lot of conflict or it's not an encouraging relationship, those would be red flags, I think. The second component of it, which is what Phil said, that you should be of one mind regarding goals and visions for childbearing and for family life in general. And the verse that came to mind for me with that is that a house divided against itself cannot stand. So I remember, before I got married to Phil, I had dated someone else, and I really had this question, what is your vision for life ministry? Because I wasn't sure there was compatibility. And when we started dating, it wasn't a question for me. I felt like I had a concept for who Phil was and what he wanted in life. And we still discussed it. But it was something that we lined up on, that our idea of a home and our idea of family and our idea of marriage was similar, and that, first of all, it starts you off by having more peace. You have the same major goals. So I thought that was good. A resource that I found that we really liked for marriage was, it was an online thing called Creating a Gospel-Centered Marriage by Brad Hambrick. Which I can send out a link if you guys want to see it at some point. He had 30-minute, I think they're on podcasts, but there were also videos five topics before foundations: communication, decision making, finances, and intimacy. And they were just like, I found it very encouraging and good things to discuss. But on that, for discussion, I just wanted to hear if other people had ways or what they found that foster peace or mutual encouragement, or one specifically that you found helpful.
So I think one of the biggest things that helped Cordy and I to have a probably biggest quantum leap in peace in a home came when we came to the conviction that the children could regard our voice and obey. And it's not that they did that perfectly afterwards, but we began having that mindset. They can hear us, they can listen, they can do what we say. And Proverbs says that, you know, that if you disciple a child, I'm paraphrasing, and they regard you, it will bring you rest or peace. And when it's ongoing strain, it wears you out. So that was a big job. It was not like something happened right away, had to really be worked at. But when you have the conviction that you can get there, and you, as you say, agree on that, that's a crucial component. Then you begin making progress. If your mindset is all children will be restless and rebel, you can only kind of deal with the damages and keep from getting too extensive, like they'll break a window, but you can keep them from burning down your house, then your life will be full of broken windows. You know, it's maybe a real burn on your house. So you have to have that conviction, and it gets retested again and again. But that was a very big problem. And Cody's not here. She would comment too. She was more on the front lines, certainly during the day, than I was, because it was working. But I would say after a year of considering that, there was a very, very noticeable difference in the home. Part of that is the children getting older too. The course of a year, it was a long time. But it wasn't just that.
So. I remember hearing, I don't know where it was, this idea of having rules in the house that are obeyed, and the person was saying that your house will have rules in it. The question is whether you make the rules or whether your children make the rules, and you follow them. And it's a correct, it's having the correct allocation of duties. Like, your children are not the rule makers. They don't get to decide, well, after you tell them to do something, then the rule is I can play for 10 more minutes and then do it. That's the child making the rules, and you're following that rule. And that's, I don't think children are old enough yet when they're young to do that. So that's it's not something they should be bearing at that age.
Another question that I had was on the topic of goals and visions for family. What for you have those included? But we can come back to that so people have time to think about it. So yeah, what goals could they include for visions for family, and are they ones that you're working, that you discuss, or that you have had to discuss and come to unity on, if they were just natural. So we can come back to that if we have time. The home, Phil had said it, like a vision and goal for our home is a safe place to raise children, welcome mothers, enjoy marriage, and live together in harmony. Practically, this includes an ability to financially afford where we live. We have to work. But I don't also work, so we're not getting, we could actually, we probably couldn't afford anything more because if I worked, we'd have childcare for six people. But, like, we could have had less people and I could have worked for it full-time and we could have had a bigger house, but that wasn't our goal. To keep the home in working order, for us, that's something that is really nice, to be able to, like, cook and clean and devote time and attention to the children. And some of that for us has involved getting like resources from others, or there's like somebody who helps me clean once in a while. And like Phil said, we use money on that that we then don't use on other things, but that's like been part of our vision for family, and it helped us with me being able to focus time on the children and other things like that. Did you have anything else you wanted to say about home?
What's the next?
Parenting. Oh, yeah. So, well, one of them was finances. So, like, how much money do you need to, like, live the ministry, the life that you feel God is calling you to live? And I do think this is an important thing to, like, to think about. Are you earning more than you need? And do you, should be like, do you need, can you take time off and focus it somewhere else, or give the money, or are you not making enough for that, and does God want you to rethink what your vision is, or to get a different job, or to work more hours, or like what, if God is giving you a burden for something and you're not there, is there something to do? So Dad had said that a good finance resource that he found was something called crown.org, and I was looking at that, and I thought it was good.
Crown.org.
And some of that is just finance management, which I think all of us have some knowledge of, but it's the same topic as marriage enrichment. Even if you're really good at managing finances, it is a topic that is well worth like learning on your entire life.
I would add to that. I notice, I think in churches, there's this common real recognition that that there can the dangers of the love of money, and that wealth is not something to be sought after and striven after, and that it's, but I do think there's also, and I think this is less recognized, that poverty is not godliness. It's not the same thing. You can see it very clearly in, there's a couple examples in the Bible of the two. It basically comes down to what you're focusing on, the incorrect thing. So we see on one side, there's the Proverbs talks about the sloth who, or the sluggard, who there's obviously work to be done, but he's lazy, he's sleepy. He imagines danger, a lion in the street that doesn't actually exist. And then we also see it in the foolish servant who's given one talent. And he's fearful of investing it because he might lose it. And then we see, so that's the danger on one side, where we kind of shirk anything that might bring any gain or any more, you can use the term money. Money is really just stored potential, stored talents or energy. It's a way to accomplish things. It's not good or bad. It's just that's all it is. And then on the other side, you see, I call him the builder of bigger barns because he doesn't have a name, but it's the person who's so focused on attaining assets and wealth, and it's not enough. And then what I'll do is I'll just hoard it, and I'll build bigger barns because I want more things. And you also see it with the rich young ruler, where he's not able to follow Jesus because he's after his wealth. So I think those are sort of opposite examples. But I don't want you to. I don't want you to think small because it's a safe thing to do, or I'll just not be rich, and then that'll keep a lot of the temptation away from me. I don't think that's a healthy thing. There is a lot of potential, a lot of good that can be done with excess excess wealth. We've been the recipients of much generosity growing up. You can be a real blessing with them.
Yeah. I don't think I had much to add to that. Then the last topic, which I think for me is, for now, is the biggest topic in the home, and that's parenting and childbearing. So the parenting side of things, you might just want to nurse.
Where is it?
Right there. Oh, next to the paper bag. Thank you. There were two, as I thought about parenting and like parental discipline, so like you as the parent, there were two topics that came to mind as like major struggles, I think, for at least my generation of parents. The first one being anger, that's like, I feel like some of us have a propensity to that. And the other being apathy or boredom with children. The verse that always comes to mind with anger is that the anger of man does not work the righteousness of God. I find it very frustrating that a lot of the time, or at least some of the time, they don't obey until I am angry. I say it 3 times, then I say, go clean it up! And then they stand up and go and clean it up. And I say, why do you wait until I'm angry? Why do you wait until I'm angry? I don't know, it doesn't help. That's where I find myself. Some things that have helped me, one, to identify when something that's anger-inducing is actually developmentally appropriate, and it's just where they're at right then. They're not actually more capable of doing what I'm asking them to do. A very simple example would be like when your 6-month-old wakes up at 10 o'clock and then 11 o'clock and then 12 o'clock and 1 o'clock and sleeps 20 minutes in between, and like keeps you up, and then you wake up in the morning and your 2-year-old wet their bed and the other kid goes into the kitchen to get a drink of water because you're not getting them a drink of water, and they spill the water because they're only 3 and they're not capable of getting water well. And that's not, like, there's no reason to, like, they're not capable of more than that. That is normal and healthy for where they're at. And it can be very frustrating, but there's no reason to get mad at them for it. A mistake, like a true mistake, as opposed to something that is like a deliberate sign of willful disobedience. Like, I am going to do this to show you that I am not going to obey you. And in that case, that is what we work on. That's not something I want. But I would say for the first ones, really choose to give grace to them. In the later situation, I have found it helpful to like assess myself to see if I am capable of handling this issue that does indeed need discipline, and if I am not, to step back from it and to like take a moment to pray, to separate myself. And then if there's a second parent round, that's a very helpful time to pass it off. And if not, to pray that you can handle it with God's grace. But just to also be aware, this is going to be a trigger situation, and I need to not let myself fire just because a trigger has been pulled. But that is, I would say this is probably, in terms of family life, and which is life right now, this would be my biggest struggle. So I would love to know, again, at the end, as we have time to come back to it, if there are, like, for others, especially others who have really worked on this, what you have found helpful. And then the apathy, boredom one. I think this is kind of something we don't think about as much, but it's a really big deal that sometimes it's not super mentally stimulating to hang out with little kids, or they're just like, they're stacking blocks. And they're not like, it made a really big difference to me, for example, when I could start reading books to Hannah. We read the Narnian Tales, we read Walt Morey books, like, and they were interesting, and I would stop and explain it to her. But she tracked with it and she followed it, and I was like, oh, this is fun. And a lot of things with kids are not yet fun. So one thing that I think can become a pitfall for us is like inappropriately going to technology at that time. So like scrolling on your phone or letting a kid play on a phone, which I think most of us are pretty aware of, but it is worth a reminder. that these happen when we get bored, and we need to be aware of it. And be aware of it, I mean, it, like, when you have friends and family members who do it, you can't necessarily be like, hey, you are bored and apathetic as a parent, and you are giving into this thing where you are scrolling on your social media when your child is right there, what are you doing? But as opportunities come up, that you can, like, if there's grace for that, you can discuss it, and we should certainly be aware of it for ourselves.
One of the things that I've done really helpful with the, you know, being bored as a parent is letting Casey know, like, I really just need some good adult conversation when you get home, okay? You can tell me anything about your day, and I will feel filled up a little bit.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So, like, if
did you know that Stephen's chicken died?
Yeah.
No, that was weird about Stephen's chicken.
That was very, very stimulating for me, too. Yes, for sure.
So, like, that's hard for him sometimes because he'll come home tired and be like, I don't even want to think about work anymore.
The biggest thing was initially, like, before she explained that, she would ask the question more like, what did you talk about at work today? And I couldn't remember conversations, or certainly any conversations that I thought were worth repeating, because sometimes we're just, it's a little ridiculous. And then when I realized, like, no, she really just... It doesn't matter if it was a conversation or a thing that happened or anything other than kids and to-do lists qualifies for this conversation. I was like, okay, now. And then also the other thing I have the tendency to do is if you say, what did you talk about? I think I should be able to recite the whole, I want to answer the question, the whole question. That's not what she wanted. She, like, if I said, you know, oh, yeah, Steve's chicken died, blah, blah, blah. Then we can start a conversation and it, like, that's kind of all I really needed to do.
Right.
But yeah.
Yeah. That was probably true for me too. Going back to the tech thing, and again, I'll just do this quickly because it probably isn't an issue for a lot of you, but in terms of my phone, one thing that I found helpful to do was to uninstall my go-to apps. Mm-hmm. So if there's something that you tend to go to, if you have to go to, like, the actual website and log into it, instead of going to the app with one click, that might be enough of a deterrent to not do it. Or to set specific rules, like, this is one thing that I'm going to do once a week, or, like, I'll check this in the evening, like, check our family discussion thing once in the evening once kids are in bed or something like that, and then to just stick with it. So I found that helpful, not to use a phone when we're at, I'm outside playing with the kids, but to, like, be engaged with them unless someone, like, Phil is calling or something like that.
Which is one of those, like, the trade-offs that we have. Set the priority because it makes me quite upset sometimes when I call and there's no answer. And that's not that infrequent, but I think I would rather have that than to wonder if, like, the kids are in the backyard and she's completely oblivious. That I would much prefer a missed call than that.
Another one I found helpful was to do activities that I enjoy with the kids. And that has included going on walks. We do a lot of going on walks. We go down to the dairy farm, we go to the horses, and we go down to Mr. John's and stuff like that. To do school. With Hannah especially, now it's old enough to do that, and I, like, our history curriculum especially is a really good curriculum. It's very interesting.
What are you using? I really want to know.
Oh, History of the World.
That's what I'm using.
Oh, good.
I love it. We just finished it. And the kids love it. Like, you know, we do the review questions. And Laura's so cute. I was like, who did we read about today? And she doesn't pronounce it like this, which makes it even more cute. But it was something about, like, Attila the Hun! And they all go over. Like, it was really funny. Like, some of them, Hannah's like, I don't know, or something, because she's coloring while I'm asking the question. But then George answered it or something. So, yeah, I really like that curriculum. So, interesting stories. So, I, last year, as school started, I bought stories that I liked. So, you know, like Blueberries for Sal. I don't forget who wrote those, but he has a couple that are really good illustrations. I hate dumb illustrations. I want to, like, look at the book and enjoy it myself.
Right.
And there are some, like, books that give you recommended literature for children, and you might as well fill your bookshelf up with it. One that I would totally recommend, which is kind of expensive, but just came out and it's really good, is called Little Pilgrim's Big Journey. And it's, like, two volumes of illustrated chapters that give Little Little Pilgrim's Progress, or Pilgrim's Progress. Mm-hmm. And we've read like the read it through. We read it through like 7 times in January. The kids loved it, and it's really good theology and really.
So
good
it's books. Little Pilgrim's
Big Journey.
I think I've heard it mentioned on like Focus on the Family or something. Like,
yeah, I think it was published in like 2023 or something. Yeah. So there's no used copy of it yet. So interesting stories, and then outside play. I like that. I really like being outside, which is part of the reason that winter and like sleety weather can be harder for me. And then I wanted to, well, you guys talked about things that have helped for you, but that's going to be a question to come back to. So the 3 questions to come back to, just so everybody is remembering, goals that you guys have set or needed to discuss, ways that you've found helpful for overcoming anger, and things that have helped you intentionally with boredom, or the shift to technology as a way to fix that. And my guess is there can be other things that people struggle with when they get bored. I think that's a big one for us. Some resources for that, which I know I've talked to you about some of them. There's a book called The TechWise Family, and they have what they call the 10 commitments for the TechWise Family, and it's ways that they feel like are appropriate to use technology. And it's moderately conservative. It's probably not moderately conservative for you guys, but for most of us, it would be. One thing they say is we use screens with a purpose. We use them together rather than using them aimlessly and alone. And then there's another book that just came out. And this one is written by somebody who is not at all Christian, which makes me find it even more interesting that he's coming to this same conclusion. And one thing he does do is he comes from an evolutionary standpoint. So he says, like, we have not evolved for this. Which I disagree with that we evolved, but I would say we are not created to do this for this. So I can, like, if you might have, it might be hard to read it because of that component. So I will give that as a caveat. But he says some very, very solid things. One that I found helpful is, there's definitely research coming out that suggests that parents are overprotective in the real world and underprotective in the virtual world. That there are not a lot of protection. There's not a lot of protection for kids with screens, and this is going to be an issue for us, perhaps not right now, but in the next 10 years as our children start using technology more.
I'd say it really starts now because they're seeing the way that we're using our technology.
Yes.
It's like one thing I'm really becoming aware of is like when I'm misusing my technology, Arthur's watching that and he's thinking, this is what I want to do, and right now mommy won't let me have her phone, but, you know, it's giving him a bad precedent for how to use technology when he's old enough to.
And there's significant research that's coming out that's saying that children between the ages of 10 and 15, first, their brains are developing very rapidly, and what we do on social media, it will not only be unhealthy, it will, like, permanently transition, like, change brain pathways that are developing, and there is a massive shift towards depression and anxiety and an inability to launch from their home that is coming from misuse of technology between the ages of 10 and 15. Yeah. So specifically social media, gaming, and pornography. And I think it is absolutely, absolutely being naive to think that they will not do all three of those things without like really good training and example setting. So I would, anyhow, if you're looking for good books to read, The TechWise Family, The Anxious Generation, and he also wrote a book called The Coddling of the American Mind, which is about helping your children grow resilient. And I think we've seen a lot of, like, somebody told me recently, I was traumatized in my childhood. And I was like, you are really, really fragile. If you think you lived a traumatized childhood, what is going on?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, how come people are growing up thinking that they are traumatized? This is not traumatic. You've shared. That was trauma. And that, and there are people who experience extremely traumatic situations and work through things, and that can be a lifelong problem. But if you feel like you were traumatized by your birth order... because you didn't get to play baseball when you were 10. Anyhow, so The Coddling of the American Mind. last thing, child rearing, so more on the child end of things as opposed to the parenting end of things. I had written out a philosophy of parenting for myself when we had one child at the age of one. And I still think it was an excellent philosophy, but it still remains in the philosophy compartment, not in like the practically applied. However, if anybody wants to read it, I'm happy to email it to you or print it out for you, because I do think it was like theologically solid. That's about it right now. But what I wrote for like my overall goal of parenting. The goal of Christian parenting is to teach our children about our relationship with God through their interactions with us, and their relationships with the world through their interactions with other people and their experiences. So trust and obedience, I think, are the two ones that I want my children to learn. And they are foundational to our relationship with God and should start being established in the early years. So, like Eric Erickson, a very important developmental psychologist, said 0 to 2, kids need to learn how to trust. And I think that's true. The second component of that is that they need to learn to obey, because it starts their establishment of, okay, God is trustworthy. My Father God is trustworthy, and hence I obey him, because I can trust him. Which puts a lot of weight on the parent, that you need to be trustworthy. I want my children to be peaceful, I want them to be kind, I want them to be curious, which that one I think can go back to technology or like a lack of parental interest. Like as you ask questions with them, like, or this is so interesting, or like, you know, they'll become curious as we are also. And I want them to be resilient. And he had said like free play and learning to navigate relationships and get in fights and fall and hurt yourself like helps with that. And I break up a lot of fights, but I also see kids break up their own fights sometimes, and that's good because they're gonna have conflict in their workplace, conflict in their marriage and such. Some of the ways I want them to experience that, I want them to see Phil and I and how we interact with each other, and that should be a good example, not a bad example. That I am intentionally patient, that I fight against anger, and I this is a huge point that I want, that the way I deal with anger-inducing situations should be an example to them. Like a good example to them, not a bad example. And that I should be focused on them, and that would be the minimal distractions, and that there should be training and discipline, that boundaries and expectations should be made clear. But just a good, I think, a verse for that, that the Lord disciplines his son, that the one that he loves, the Lord disciplines those he loves as the father of the son he delights in. So that boundaries and discipline is indeed a scriptural part of parenting. Other helpful things, to have their needs met in a stable home. So to have a loving environment, to have good rhythms of rest, food, and play. And I think as we become parents, and we've been used to going out to a late night meeting, or sure, we'll get together and go to a movie. Like at some point, you can't do that anymore. And Ira, I'm guessing your group, like there's gonna probably at some point be a transition away from some late night dances and stuff like that. Or there won't be.
I wouldn't mind an early night dance now.
I know. Like the children will be a part of that, or the types of dances. Like if you want kids to learn to dance, the complexity is gonna have to drop down. And like if you have your 3-year-olds with you, it's just going to be different for a little while. But that it is a good part of real life. And that's a word that I found very applicable. Does this teach you about real life? Does this prepare you for real life? I found habits of the household helpful, even if you just go through the name of the chapter or the name of the book. Habits of the household, that there should be like routines and habits that are helpful. And then the last thing I had, just a note on resilience versus fragility. Like I said, that there's been an increasing trend of anxiety, depression, and fragility. I think between 2010 and 2015, there was like a 30% increase in like diagnoses of anxiety and depression, which were not just subjective. Like there were legitimate hospitalizations and suicide attempts. From the social media somewhat.
There's been studies done as technology gets, like social media technology grows, like very specific things that are invented are then result in specific things. Like they say when Facebook starts and or other social media, and then one of the big ones is when, which I've never used, but there's a like button. When the first like button was invented, which I think is other people responding to something that you post. When that was first made accessible to people, to kids, really, it began this kind of slew of unhealthy self-consciousness and needing other people to respond to you in a random strangers way more than is in your general circle. And then there's emotional trauma and difficulty if they don't do that or something.
Yeah. And one more book I read on this is called The Vanishing of the American Adult. And this was written by a Christian. So if you want to read something from a Christian standpoint, you can. I think he's the president of a Christian college. And he talks about like the lack of adulting. Like he told some kids, like he starts with saying they had a 13-foot Christmas tree and he had a bunch of the college students put the lights on it, and he came back and there was lights on the first 8 feet. And they're like, well, we couldn't reach any higher. And he's like, problem solving. Did you talk to maintenance to get a ladder? And he's like, what? Like this is, wait, you couldn't problem solve. Like you literally thought that was the end of the road. And then he talks about a slew of other things, but just that, yeah, we want our kids to grow up knowing how to handle adulthood. I do think it's worth it to say that technology is a tool, and it's a fine, good, and necessary tool. I'm not saying this thinking that technology is bad. Not even that social media is bad, because I do have social media and I enjoy it. I think that like I am like a completely developed brain, and I do have like it's not generally. Like the things that he describes, I don't think are generally problems for me. I watch it, but I'm not paranoid about it like I would be for my 11-year-old. And I do think it's helpful for finances and other things like that. I think it's like guns and knives, that you keep them out of the hands of children and that you teach them to handle it responsibly. That's my personal thing.
And there's an age where it's too young to give your child.
There is an age where it's too young to give it at all, and there is an age where you really need to supervise it, and an age where you need to coach them in independence. Yeah.
I just think that it's a little more than guns and knives, and it seems to work out fine for you two. That's great. But I think there's a lot of people, adults, that doesn't work out so fine. And
yeah.
Guns and knives don't have an addiction.
Right. And it can be like alcohol.
That's
also.
It's a different thing.
Right. I think that certainly could be the case. And I think for somebody who's already given into it between the ages of 10 and 15, they may not ever be able to handle it. Just like somebody who's been an alcoholic might not ever be able to have a drink and have it not be a problem for them. But yes, I would say that's true, that it is different than guns and knives, and that it does have an addictive component.
By design.
Yeah.
What's that? Yeah, by design it does.
Yeah, I think that was one of the things I kind of come to realize in the last couple of years, is that, like, you know, this isn't one of those things where you think, like, well, you know, maybe I go to the park too much because I like being at the park. Like, you have somebody on the other end of this that spends billions of dollars to figure out how to get you addicted to it and keep you, like, in every single app on your phone. It's like, that's what it
right.
is.
And it's not just addiction either. There's an isolating component to it. And
it's not just Satan doing this, but there's, like, actively people working on that to
right.
do it. So, like, you just have to be aware of that and say, how can I use this in the ways that I should or that I have to without actually giving into that, and, like, just being aware that, like, that's a component of what this thing is built for.
Okay, and then my last question here was, what other specific goals do people have for their children, and what have been helpful things that you've found or done that work to achieve these goals? Do people want me to repeat the questions, or do you still have them? It was 12 o'clock. We have a few more minutes before 12
o'clock. I have some things.
Oh, okay.
Sure, still. Well, I guess three things. I don't know how they really fit in.
They're small.
One of the thoughts I had about preparing this was the verse, like, seek first the kingdom of God, or store up for yourselves treasures in heaven. Basically, we're told to focus on things that have lasting, eternal value to them. And I do think that there are, that includes family and a home for a few reasons. I think there's a natural effect, like you're investing in someone who is going to be around after you're gone. And that'll go on for generations. Like, not only are you investing in them, but if you do a good job with them, then they will then invest in, like, you could just raise one healthy generation and that's the end of it. But that's not, you could certainly put, I guess grandparents will affect, the way a grandparent has lived his life will affect the grandchildren and beyond that. So in that way, I think there's lasting eternal value in that. I also think that it's like a natural discipleship, a way to kind of raise a Christian and a follower who will then affect society. And I do think, this is a completely different topic, but I do think that society here on this earth is part of what is called the kingdom of heaven, the kingdom of God. I don't think he's completely disconnected or uninterested in how our society here is functioning, and that he just as soon light a match. And the fact that he hasn't done that yet tells me that he wants it to be something that points to him and something that is healthy for him. And then the last thing is that our eternal character our is affected by the way we create a home and serve a family and serve those around us. I think that beyond, you can say we do it for them, or we do it for the children, or we do it for our neighbors. But in doing that, I think it changes us as well, and it's a sanctification for us by doing these things. And also that this is like this whole thing, this home and family and life vision is a step of faith. It requires faith, and it exercises our faith, because you wouldn't do it if you were afraid, or you assumed the worst was going to happen, or you weren't, you know, why, I don't want to raise a kid because he's probably just going to, who knows what's going to happen, these are the statistics, and whatever, I don't want to, what if they end up in prison or something? That would be someone who's burying their talents in the earth because he's afraid that it'll be ruined. Or even to invest in anything larger than yourself. And then the last thing is really how we, our minds, our entire mindset behind this sort of thing. We, I think America especially, we invest a tremendous amount in preparing for a career, basically for making money. A lot of careers aren't even that meaningful anymore. And we think nothing of that. We'll rack up hundreds of thousands of dollars for that, and we'll spend years and decades preparing for that. And I don't think that's necessarily wrong. It can, of course, be and is abused and misunderstood and misused. But we don't seem to have the same thing for creating a home and a family and a neighborhood, like a small society. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's right. I think there should be, like, you shouldn't just get married and then, you know, okay, well, now figure it out. I think that's naive and that's irresponsible. There should be a practicing and a training component, and like you should be teaching them. Someone has said, it's not quite true, but whenever you do something, if you do it by your, if you did it by yourself, you've wasted opportunity.
To teach.
Right, right. Yeah. Of course, there would be things that you would do yourself, but the principle is that anything you can do well should be passed on. And I think I might be wrong about this, and but it seems to me that it's still more alive with fathers training their sons, or you know, apprenticeships in the work area. But that's still kind of respected. The Bible specifically teaches that the older women should teach the younger women, and that's I don't think we do well at that. And maybe it has to do with kind of a stigma being put on home life, that it's not real. It's kind of done on the side. You don't want to. You know, we place a tremendous amount of value on money and what money can buy, and and I've seen it done, and I've seen where it wasn't done in the next generation. And there's like parents that have had a really well. I remember going to their house when I was a kid, and it was a very nice place to go, and they had a very nice home and very nice family. And then their children seemed to have lost many of those abilities. They're not interested, or they're not able to, or there's a noticeable decline. And that's the natural regression if it's not deliberately taught to the next religious person. I think that's it.
Yeah, and it is also true that, like, it is like a failure to grow, like, to have a mature family growing up, and
yeah.
As you grow up and becoming anxious or depressed is like an age long problem. I don't think just because we do all these things right guarantees that our children will be mentally healthy and not addicted and launch into adulthood well and have meaningful marriage relationships and families themselves. They're just some things that I think we'll face as parents, and I hope that we'll continue to have these discussions, because it's going to be something that I think is central to all our lives for the coming years, and it's going to change in 10 years. It's going to be very different than what we're working on now.
Can I just add one thing to what Phil said? I think sometimes, even if it's not something you're really good at, if you realize to the God's beauty of it and the importance of it, sometimes you can still do it. For instance, when I was growing up in school, I had dyslexia, so my parents didn't let me do an instrument or have any lessons for music ever. But I really think music is beautiful, and I think it's great for kids. So from when Oliver was little, once a week we would sing. And I'm not really a singer, and I don't even know what to find a note on the piano. But we did that growing up, and we couldn't give the kids lessons because Eric didn't want to spend the money on it, but they all love music. Mm-hmm. But it had to be very intentional for that to happen, but it wasn't because I was good at music. So mm-hmm. I think sometimes you can, if you know it's a really good thing and you think it's good for the children to raise the Lord that way, you can still do that mm-hmm. sometimes.
Ira, you're also allowed to comment on this.
Thank you.
Well, you are an example of someone who I think does really well at helping us specifically. But like she was talking about, I really want someone who can hold the baby in a front pack and also catch the pony when it gets away. And then, you're basically it. There's you.
Yes, I haven't actually talked to her about it yet.
So, and it like it's an example of someone who's resilient and who's. So I fully intend to send my kids out, just like with the same mindset as I would have them do math and do read history and science and any other discipline, to have them help in a home. It just, you learn how to deal with, how to talk to people, talk to adults, and how to deal with good kids and not good kids, and how to, like, things that you might not have learned at home or just learned in a different way. And it's, so that's, that, I think everyone can do that.
And no matter how hard we try, we're like, our family isn't going to be great at everything. So if they get to go to the Losis and the Hepworths and stuff like that, and Miss Ira's family, that they're going to learn things, and the Cresses, they're going to learn things that we can't teach them.
I appreciate what you touched on of like the need to, you know, train young people for, you know, life other than just a career. So that's one of those things that, like, I think part of it is that culturally, as a man, you're not often, when people ask you what do you want to do when you grow up, they don't often, it's like not an acceptable answer to say husband, father, and this is the career I'm going to do, but like those, that's the part that I care more about. It's always the, like, I really just want to know, what are you going to go to school for, and what are you going to do with your money, how are you going to make money? And even more so almost with a woman, if you just said, well, my real thing I want to do is be a wife and mother, it's like, well, that's like not actually okay. You have to tell me what you're going to go to college for and what you're, you know, like, and it maybe shouldn't even be on the list of things you like answer that culturally. But at the same time, I think the downside is, you know, we often have classes on marriage and parenting for the people who are already married and parents. And like, we often don't give teaching on like marriage other than like,
and they're also, before you get married, I've noticed, you know, they're often being given by the same generation that they're teaching. Like, yeah. That's fine. It's good that you're teaching your peers, but I do think there's a natural wealth of wisdom from people who did it just before you did it.
And I think one of the things you get to that from that too is that, like, it passes on to those who are not yet married. Like, if the only place that they gather knowledge of what it means to be married is from movies and television and the culture, that's not good. And then they might not get married because they'll say, well, okay, it's actually not that worthwhile or whatever, whereas if you can get that. But, you know, I feel like in our church, there's times where, like, if you give a teaching on marriage and there's singles present, they're like, all right, I'm going to go scroll Facebook. This one's not about me. Mm-hmm. And it's like, right. Like, when you were younger, like, wanting to be an electrician, I feel like when you went to school to learn about electrician, you weren't like, oh, I'm not an electrician yet, so I don't need to know this, you know? Like, so, like, unless you know the Lord has called you to be single, like, why? But anyway. Yeah. I appreciate touching on it, though. Not me.
I can also send out the names if people want to see them.